Hi, this is Daniel James, star of the Simpleton Podcast. This week, my lanky sidekick Scott Gall is holidaying in Juarez, Mexico, with his young family. While Scott is on holiday catching a few rays, I've put together a little best-of compilation for the first 13 weeks of the podcast. We've had our ups, we've had our downs, we've had our highs, we've had our lows. But what can't be denied is that we've changed the face of podcasting forever. So without further ado, let's roll the best of the Simpleton.
Scott, let me get into this. I think I can speak for both of us when I say that we were both taken aback by an email sent to our address, contact@thesimpleton.com.au. from someone purporting to be Jesper Hansen. Simpletons, you may remember that last week in episode 5 of The Simpleton, I threw down the gauntlet to the person who left a comment on thesimpleton.com.au claiming to be Jesper Hansen, a Danish exchange student who studied at Scott and I's high school for about 12 months, 17 or 18 years ago. I challenged Jesper, in quotation marks, just in case you didn't get that inference, to contact us with a photo of himself holding a copy of the Copenhagen Post as proof that it was the aforementioned. Well, as many of you may have seen, the email was sent, and I did indeed post a copy of the photo on thesimpleton.com.au. Scott, you've seen the photo. What did you make of it?
Dodgy. Although not dodgy enough to completely rule out the possibility it could be Jesper. It was photoshopped, so the two possibilities are it's not Jesper, or for some reason Jesper chose not to send a real photo of himself with the newspaper, but a photoshopped photo of himself with the newspaper. It's my take.
That was my thoughts, almost exactly. If you go to the website, it's still up there. It will be up there for all time. But if you go to the website and have a look at the photo, there's just two things I noticed about it, Scott. One thing was that the guy in the bed holding the paper looked nothing like the Jesper I knew. secondly, his wife was unexpectedly quite attractive. I won't go into too much detail about that, but I think you were right that the photo was indeed photoshopped. I mean, if you just get the extremely pixelated copy of the Copenhagen Post that both of them are holding, and the fogginess around the hands, and it something just didn't add up. But you're right, there wasn't quite enough there for us to rule out the possibility that it was actually Jesper altogether.
Yeah.
So, Scott, I think I'll just start this story right now and get straight into it.
Let's get straight into this. I cannot wait.
So, Scott, remaining unconvinced about the authenticity of the bespoke photograph, I decided to take matters into my own hands and get to the bottom of this controversy.
Here we go again.
The email had sent me into a tailspin. If the email was from Jesper, then all well and good. But if it wasn't, then who the blazes was behind this elaborate falsehood? I step outside my service department and get Felix to hail me a cab to the airport. I slip him a crisp $20 note for his service and bid him adieu. The cab driver asks me where to. I say, take me to Copenhagen. The ride out to Tullamarine takes an interminable amount of time. I am lost in my thoughts, trying to pull the various threads of this complex tapestry of deceit together. I pass Tullamarine clutches and brakes and feel like I'm being driven down a boulevard of broken dreams. But I can't focus on that right now. All that matters is Copenhagen. I get upgraded from business to first class, and although it's a little early in the day for a complimentary glass of Dom Perignon Rosé, it does go some way to easing my tension. I relax back in the seat and stare at the effervescent bubbles of dissolved carbon dioxide magically appearing from nowhere and then once again vanishing, just like Jesper Hansen had done all those years ago. We take off, and as the 747 ascends through the clouds, I look out the window and just make out the glistening rooftop of Sydenham Mufflers, like a beacon in the fog. A beacon with over 3,000 parts in store that offers some of the most competitive prices for exhaust systems anywhere in Melbourne's outer outer northwest. As my 32 hours in transit drags on and on, my mind wanders to mountains climbed and valleys traversed in years past. Ecuador. Ecuador. I couldn't let this become another Ecuador. It had been over 18 years since I left Ecuador. But Ecuador would never leave me. Damn you, Pedro. Damn you to hell. Touchdown at Copenhagen Airport. I'd been brushing up on my Danish and was confident I could handle myself through any scenario. After a full cavity search at customs, I step out into the concourse to hail a cab to the Radisson when I feel my hailing arm being grabbed at the wrist. I immediately think of deploying my Kyondu to dispatch the would-be attacker, and then think better of it.
Not funny moves, Mr. James. Would you kindly come with me?
I hadn't expected a welcoming party so soon.
Mr. Henriksen would like a quiet word.
Henriksen. I hadn't expected Henriksen. I knew him by reputation only, but I knew enough about this world-renowned beekeeper to know that he was no man to be messed with. The short drive to Henriksen's palace has posed as many questions as the 32-hour flight. What did Henriksen want? What was his connection to Jesper? And who else knew I was in the Danish capital? I am marched through the unique expanse of the palace until I am shown into a large office and see a man staring out the window overlooking the stately gardens.
Ladies, leave us,
he demands the two bikini-clad women adorning his Swahili ottoman.
May I offer you a drink, Mr. James?
I ask for a juice on the rocks.
I trust Mr. Soffles treated you with the courtesy and respect you deserve after such a long flight.
I ask what this is all about, trying to place Henriksen's wavering accent.
Let me come straight to the point, Mr. James. You and I both know why you're in Copenhagen. I bear no ill towards you, but let me just say this. If you value your life, Mr. James, you'll go straight back to the airport and take the first flight out. There's nothing here for you in Copenhagen.
I don't take threats slightly, Mr. Henriksen. Excellent scotch, by the way.
That's a maybe, Mr. James. But we don't want another debacle such as the one that had happened in Ecuador.
Ecuador. Ecuador. How did he know about that? Had he spoken to Pedro? Damn you, Pedro. I mustn't let him know that I'm rattled. Mr. Henriksen, my only concern is trying to ascertain whether the person who wrote into the Simpleton podcast was the Danish exchange student that he or she was claiming to be.
Come, come, Mr. James. You and I both know that you are out of your depth. Mr. Hansen was merely an exchange student that happened to visit your small rural village over some 17 years ago. What could he possibly want with you and Hergård now? The notion is as ridiculous as it is juvenile.
He was right, of course. The chances of the writer being Hansen were remote.
Would you please follow me, Mr. James?
Do I have a choice?
We shall see. Please, just come with me.
I am shown to Henriksen's private elevator. The short lift ride takes us to an old, musty archive. The room was enormous, with very minimal light.
I apologize for the poor light, Mr. James, but it's the only way we can slow the decay of these precious realities. I have Mr. Soffles digitizing this entire collection, but as you can imagine, it's going to take some time.
Henriksen then pulls out a small stepladder and climbs to the highest reaches of a bookshelf, where he pulls down what looks like to be a poorly produced A4-sized booklet.
Mr. James, what I'm about to show you, no man has seen in over 17 years. If its context was to fall into the wrong hands, it could have a grave impact on the future of mankind. I hope that once you see what I'm about to show you, you will finally put this silly notion out of your head that it was Jesper that emailed you and Hergård at, how you say, the Simpleton.
Henriksen then hands me a booklet. I have to blow the dust off the cover to make out any distinction.
Here, you may use my monocle.
I insert the monocle and am taken aback immediately by what I see. It is the 1994 yearbook to my old high school.
Where did you get this?
That is of no concern of yours, Mr. James. What I do encourage you to do now, though, is turn to page 15.
It is there on page 15 that I see a toothy smile of a young Jesper Hansen staring back at me.
I transcend into a state of delirium. The mountains and the valleys come back to me. All the years, all the trials and tribulations come back to me and overwhelm me in this man's archive.
They say a picture can say 1,000 words. This picture was saying much more than that. Much more.
As you can see, Mr. James, the boy in that picture and the man in the picture sent to you and Herr Gohl with a quite attractive partner are not one and the same.
I can see that now.
It was quite foolish of you to come all this way on less than a whim, Mr. James. I would have expected more from you than that. But what of the real Jesper? Mr. Hansen will be a part of every man's story, no matter who you are or where you are in the world. There is a little bit of Jesper inside all of us.
That didn't even make sense. Arriving back in Melbourne, I wondered what all that was about. It's funny how one can get caught up in hysteria. In my case, I got caught up in a little Jesper mania. I guess what I'd learnt was that it's your road and yours alone. Others may walk it with you, but no one can walk it for you. I walk back into my service apartment and pour myself a pot of hot coffee and sit down to record another Simpleton podcast. Damn you, Jesper. Damn you, Pedro.
Powerful. Powerful stuff. And that was quite a scrape you got yourself into back there. I'm just glad you got back okay. Inspired by Daniel's return to stand-up comedy, I have decided to compile a volume of my own poetry, which I've been writing since childhood. The volume of my favorite pieces is currently at the printers, and the book will be titled Elite Bush Poetry, Masterpieces of a Little Aussie Legend. Should be out in stores by the end of September.
Did you name that book, Scott?
I did indeed. Why?
It's not exactly self-effacing, is it? You're basically referring to yourself as an elite bush poet. In I guess very much in the traditions of Banjo Paterson and the like.
Yeah.
And you've described to the content provided by this elite bush poet as masterpieces of a little Aussie legend. in the one title, you referred to yourself as an elite bush poet, the content within as masterpieces, and again referring to yourself as a little Aussie legend. Have you ever produced a book of poetry before, Scott?
There's a first for everything, isn't there? Until recently, I was a hobby poet.
Are you just producing these yourself and just printing them off with your own printer and stapling them together and selling them to people on the street?
No,
rugged photo of you on the front cover.
No, I've been writing since about the age of about 8 or 9. Every year, I would have produced quite a few, pretty much for my own amusement. Sometimes I've attended special readings at the local libraries, entered a few competitions, won a few prizes.
And this is where you gained your legendary status.
Well, I'm told I'm very good, Daniel. And shall I give you a sample of one of the poems?
Look, you've built it up. Let's have a listen.
All right. This is one of the poems which will be featured in the book. It is titled "The Driver's Dog." Here it is. The dusty plains of the sun-battered Aussie outback. The vast cattle station. A barren aesthetic dreamland in a sea of mutual hegemony is abuzz with the looming muster. The farmhands, seated concordantly atop their tail-swishing stallions, await the call to go, their shirts already macerated with patches of sweat. The cattle in the distance know the score. They've done it all before. There are other players too, each of them ready to fulfill their role. One of them is the Droover's dog. Ruff! Ruff! But where is he? Where is he? Probably trying to force his way into the chicken house. That bloody Droover's dog. Ruff! The cubs. The task is eventually fulfilled. The farmhands, now dismounted, lean against an old shed made of corrugated tin, their parched throats greatly relieved by the icy cold beer that is passed around in bottles by the landholder. There is barking in the distance. It is coming from the chicken house. It can only be the Droover's dog. Ruff, ruff. Someone better get there soon, or there's going to be blood. Feathers too, the bloody Droover's dog. Ruff, ruff, ruff. War? Disease. Famine, pestilence, the Droover's dog. Drought, flood, storm, fire, the bloody Droover's dog. Waketh he that waketh not? Well, does one really have to answer? And yet, who are we, though united we may seem, to yearn for the very change that we have for so long opposed? Born of eminence, dim of wit we shall remain, as the vortex of malignance rideth high upon the cloud of the noble fish. We are to do not as one, yet one is not the bloody Droover's dog. Ruff, ruff! Oh yes, be in doubt, be in no doubt, like a creaky wooden floorboard, the obtuse oxen who flieth unhindered, as a spawning salmon that swimmeth to the final point of no return, scorned upon by the proverbial empty suit. Oh, woe to you, people, king and kings of opulence, who inflicteth misery upon others with such indifference. Woe to you, that bloody Droover's dog. Ruff! We must fortify the chicken house, that bloody Droover's dog. I am absolutely pumped at what I'm about to share with you both. Tony Robbins is a name we are all familiar with. The motivational speaker and self-help author from America has made a fortune from his books, audiovisual packages, and seminars over the last few decades. And no one would doubt that he is the king of his domain, to coin a cliche. Simply put, he's the shining star of the motivational speaking circuit, not to mention self-help publishing. Like anyone in public life, however, he has also had his fair share of negative publicity, such as the recent scandal at a San Jose event attended by over 6,000 people. In which
It's San Jose. It's straight up and down, San Jose.
Well, if you want to pronounce it in your coarse little Aussie twang accent, Daniel, then I guess it's San Jose. But to those who, you know what I'm saying, don't you?
No, sorry, mate. It's San Jose. It's not
San Jose.
It's just San Jose, right?
Let's move on. Let's not
If we're speaking in our native accent, it's San Jose. It's never. It's not even in Spanish. It's not even San Jose. It's San Jose every fucking day of the week. But continue.
Yeah, I will. I will. The event was in that city recently, and it was attended by over 6,000 people, over 20 of whom suffered serious burns to their feet as a result of walking on hot coals. But enough about Tony Robbins. Mm. How exciting is this, Daniel and Simpletons? I managed last week to obtain an interview with Maximilian Wolfgang von Wilhelm, pretty much the German equivalent of Tony Robbins, a household name here in Germany. The reclusive, eccentric, motivational speaker and self-help author is notoriously averse to being interviewed. But somehow I was able to get a hold of him and ask him about his own career as well as his own recent scandal. Here is the interview. Maximilian Wolfgang von Wilhelm, I thank you for agreeing to speak with me.
Yeah, I am happy to be here, Herr Gohl. I have nothing to hide.
We all know about the recent incident that occurred at a Tony Robbins event, but you have not been untouched by scandal yourself. Last year, you embarked on your nationwide Grab the Power and Don't Let Go tour. To promote it, there was extensive advertising in the German news media featuring still images of you working closely with various world dignitaries. Of course, it later came to light that most of the pictures were photoshopped, the heads of the dignitaries being placed upon the shoulders of common folk. Not very good for your credibility, Mr. von Wilhelm?
I have nothing to hide. These images were all legitimate. I can provide originals. I have nothing... Yeah? Mein lawyer, Hans Gruber, has advised me to say no more on this point.
Sales remain strong for the package you released after the tour. I speak here, of course, of the Grab the Power and Don't Let Go audio-visual package, featuring 40 video cassettes and 99 audio cassettes, priced at 260 euros. But since then, you've been rather quiet. Why? And what's next for Maximilian Wolfgang von Wilhelm?
Odin's beard, man. Is 99 not enough for you? Maybe you are needing to have, say, 40 fun videos? Maybe the poor little interviewer would be liking 100 cassettes? Yeah? This make you happy? I am very busy, man. Many other projects help billions of people. What you have done to give yourself a right to ask such nincompoop question?
You're a fan of neuro-linguistic programming, a philosophy widely derided by other motivational speakers. What have you got to say to its critics?
I have nothing to hide. I say to such people, please fall over and die asses of a horse.
What made you think as a young man, I want to enter the motivational speaking circuit and write some self-help books while I'm at it? What made you come to that conclusion as a young man?
When I was a young man, a vision has come to me. This vision of God himself.
Back in 2004, you suffered a complete nervous breakdown. Since then, you were pronounced legally dead on the operating table. And were it not for the quick actions of these surgeons who were able to revive you, you would not have survived the plastic surgery. In addition, you've been in and out of rehab clinics for both drug and alcohol addiction. And in 2010, your seventh marriage was annulled. And to top it off, you are not on speaking terms with the majority of your children from the various marriages. Is it hard for you, Mr. von Wilhelm, to stay upbeat in light of all this and to grab the power and not let go?
Nine. I have nothing to hide. Specifically, I ask, would a worthless mundane nothing such as yourself be able to recover from such cruel misfortunes as served up by that black-hearted bitch we call fate? And for the record, it is my decision not to talk to those brats. They are undisciplined ingrates. Oh, Daddy, please to spend my birthday with me. Oh, Papa, please to enjoy Christmas together as family. They get such negative traits from their mother, of course.
Okay. If you could have dinner with anyone in the world, who would it be and what would you like to talk about with them?
Yeah, I would have dinner with myself. I would be asking many questions. Better than this scheisse question you're asking, yeah? I am asking, oh, Mr. Wilhelm, why are you so kind and intelligent? Why are you so passionate, so positive and success? How it makes you to feel? You are so big and kind, yeah? You are a great man, yeah? And he says to me, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, okay. Now, I know it's a multi-layered thing, but if you had to put it concisely, Mr. Van Wilhelm, what would you say is the key to success?
Positive. Always positive. Always! I am positive! But for the HIV, please do not be positive.
Very good. Very good. And now, a last question for you. Here it is. What is the meaning of life?
To crush your enemies, to see them fall at your feet, to take their horses and goods and hear the lamentation of their women. That is best.
Maximilian Wolfgang von Wilhelm, thank you for your time.
You're very, very welcome, Scotty. It's been a pleasure. Having a nice day, yeah.
Yes, some pretty funny stuff there. But you know what? When a couple of knockabout guys such as Scott and I produce this caliber of entertainment week in, week out, things can get a little bit tense from time to time, as is witnessed in this next segment.
I, for the last 4 weeks, have had to meet production costs out of my own pocket for the sports report. Daniel, gutted, shattered. Daniel, I have a young family. It's unsustainable. It is unsustainable.
You're pretty beat up, aren't you, Scott?
I can take your ongoing cynicism, your barbs, but this latest blow is the final straw. I cannot go on like this. I just can't, simpletons and Daniel. And so, it's with much sadness that I announce that today's sports report will be my last, at least until a permanent sponsor is found.
I think it's a good thing. Your sports reports have been inconsistent and lackluster over the past 9 weeks, and I think it'll do you good, and I think it'll do the listeners good if you have a bit of a break from it, Scott.
Okay.
So I'm saying this to help you, to make you feel better. I'm saying that your world sports reports have been lackluster and shit, and the fact that you can't afford to do them any longer is a good thing for you, me, and all the simpletons out there. That's what I'm saying. So don't feel too badly about it, okay? That was shit.
Well, shall we get the last one under our belt then, Daniel? The last sports report.
Yeah, let's get over and done with.
All right. Hakapee is a sport native to Easter Island. Every year, a competition is held on Maunga Pui, attracting both locals and visitors alike. The aim of the game is it's blah, 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 blah. 2 weeks ago, Daniel, you listen to this now, Daniel. 2 weeks ago, I did a story on spitting kudu crap out of your mouth. How am I supposed to top that, Daniel Simpletons? How the hell am I supposed to top that? How can you top that? You mean vicious bastard. No, I was going to use plural. I don't mean you, simpletons. I mean Daniel on his own. You mean vicious bastard. Do you have a clue about the pressure that puts on me? How am I supposed to top? I put my heart and soul into this segment week in, week out. Daniel, I'll tell you now what you can do with it. I'll tell you now where you can shove it.
Scott.
You prick.
Scott. Yes. Calm down. Okay? The world sports report is no more. Thank fuck. All right? It was a stupid, crappy inane report about sports no one gives a toss about. And the fact that it's gone because you can't afford to do it anymore, because you have to support the family or some bullshit like that, is a fucking blessed relief to all and sundry.
Oh, here we go.
I don't know.
What are you doing? Look, Scott, pull yourself together and don't take too much emphasis from the word pull. Just get it together, all right? Don't fucking worry about it. It's not a big deal.
I will tell you one thing now. You listening?
Yeah.
Of all the plants that cover the earth and lay...
Hang on, wait a sec, all right? Fucking cut his mic. Cut his mic again.
What the fuck are you on about?
Let me finish. Now you shut up and let me finish. Of all the plants that cover the earth and lie like a fringe of hair upon the body of our grandmother, try to obtain knowledge that you may be strengthened in life. That was drilled into me since childhood, Daniel, and I'm trying to turn the tables a little bit and, let that apply to the simpletons. And that's what I've been doing week in, week out. Look what it's brought me.
It's brought you fuck all, mate. What? You know why it's brought fuck all?
I know why it's brought
It's bullshit, that's why.
Yeah. This, you know what this reminds me of? The Strathbogie incident. Very, very reminiscent of this.
I fucking told you not to fucking bring the Strathbogie incident up, right? That is history. Those days are long gone. We're supposed to put that sort of thing behind us. Do not mention the Strathbogie incident again.
Yeah, well, I mean, do we even continue with this crappy podcast today? Why bother?
I'm fucked if I know. I mean...
Daniel, listen. Yes, we do. Because we have got simpletons listening to this. We have to do it for...
Thank fuck they're not listening to this part of it. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. We have to put our animosity for each other aside, Daniel, and we have to pull through this for them. I don't know if we'll be able to do it next week. This could be it. But at least for this week, we have to pull through to the end for them.
All right, let's get this fucking thing over and done with. Mm. We'll talk about it off air later on.
Mm.
But we'll move on to the shout out. Now, just fucking pull yourself together. Stop crapping on. And we'll just bring this baby home. Just fucking relax, all right?
Yeah, all right. Daniel, you are doing the shout out this week. Go for it.
That's right, Scott. I've got the shout out this week. Scott, I think it's time that we moved on to the shout out.
Daniel, you are again doing the shout out this week. What have you got for us?
Okay, this week, Scott, I'm giving a shout out to the Coonawarra Scott,
beg your pardon.
So we're off to what?
Stop. No.
What? No, what's your problem?
No. You listen to me now.
Burma.
Where did they come from? Stop. You can't hide behind Burma every time. There are limits, Daniel. There are limits. I mean, how is it limitless? Is Burma limitless, Daniel? Is that an excuse that is limitless?
I thought it was in relation to this podcast, Scott.
No, that's awful. And honestly, why is that a real team?
Of course, it's a fucking real team. We do that week in, week out. The Coonawarra.
What are they?
Sorry, I'll say it again. The Coonawarra.
What do they play?
Football.
That's who would name their team that?
Scott, tell us what you've got for us this week.
Well, what do you say? You know, we're short of funds. Will we get into that one now? Our latest push.
Better just touch on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, I need to put this into context. So listen, hear me out. Now, I'm sure we've all heard interviews with actors and actresses over the years, and there's pretty much two threads that go through all of those interviews. One, the actors, actresses tend to come across as deranged, egotistical vermin, but let's put that aside right now. The second one is that they always say, oh, yes, I make the motion pictures to pay the bills, but my heart is with theatre. I crave theatre. So let's just now put this into context, simpletons. When it comes to Daniel, no, I'm not saying he's deranged, egotistical vermin at all. In fact, he's not. I can say that. But if he were an actor, no problem. No problem. To compare Daniel to an actor, the podcast are the motion pictures for Daniel, but his heart craves stand-up comedy. His heart craves to stand up in front of a bunch of people, cabaret, if you want to call it that, stand-up comedy, and just to give people joy. And
more joy, yep.
Yeah, yeah. So, Daniel, do you want to talk a little bit about what I'm getting at here?
Well, long before I was a professional podcaster, Scott, I was a stand-up comedian. I started the comedy circuit during my formative years at RMIT and cut my teeth with the likes of Rove McManus and Dara Richardson. And you know, it's something that I earned a living at for quite a few years before turning my mind to matters more important. But now, given that the podcast is struggling financially, and that, well, stand up is my main money cow, I might as well go back to it in order to keep this fledgling little podcast afloat. So, Scott, I believe you've got a hold of some sort of promo.
I have. I've cut this one together. I guess without further ado, Daniel, we'll let it roll, will we?
Yeah, roll it.
He's back, and he's coming to a town near you. That's right. The Simpleton Podcast's funny man is at it again as he puts his critically acclaimed one-man comedy tour on the road again.
Yo, filthy whores, yo, pimp daddies. You know, I'd like to say it'd be nice to be here tonight, but I was taught by my parents never to lie. No, seriously, this place is a fucking toilet.
You'll laugh out loud as Dad recreates some of his most infamous routines.
And I'm walking down the street, and this homeless dude comes up to me and he asks, hey, have you got any money? I go, yeah, I've got plenty. And I kept on walking. Stupid bastard didn't know what to do.
Bring your family and enjoy an entertaining night out.
Yeah, well, it's clear that I've got a pretty lame audience here tonight. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to get a bag of crack cocaine and throw it in the middle of you all and watch you junk sick bozos tear yourselves apart trying to get to your medicine. You sick junkie fucks.
Daniel's riotous antics will have you and your loved ones rolling in the aisles.
So I sit to the guy, no man, no. And he was like, yeah man, yeah.
Daniel will be performing at Greensboro RSL. The Palms Maidstone, the Yarraville Club, Shopping Town Doncaster, Spotswood Hotel, the Brighton Yacht Club, Diggers Rest Workers League, Vermont Ladies Union, Ringwood Sailors Collective, and the Shepperton Club.
So come along and have a gander. You won't be disappointed.
...2012 has been hyped in the media as the year in which the world as we know it could end. While of the view that something major may indeed happen, however, a large number of people within the New Age movement believe it's going to be something optimistic, positive, perhaps even the beginning of the Age of Aquarius. With this in mind, I set off on a five-day mid-year trip to the Harz mountain ranges in north central Germany. Described as dreamlike and mystical, the mountain area is noted for its pagan history, with goblins, witches, and demons prominent in its folklore. With the universal shift in human consciousness possibly upon us, the trip represented an ideal chance for me, Scott Gore, to get in early and grab a bit for myself. This is my story. Oh, Daniel, you put music on it.
Well, I'm helping you with your spiritual journey, Scott. I thought the music might help.
Tacky, Daniel. That's just tacky.
Just get on with it.
The four-hour trip from Berlin to Wernigerode in the Harz Mountains lasted about 4 hours, just enough time for me to finish my personal copy of the Akashic Records. My sense of ki was in perfect harmony with the external plane as I arrived at my destination. Though it was early as shaken at having to pay a euro to relieve myself at a civil convenience unit in Berlin Central Station. Rain is common in the Harz. The tree-covered hills, rolling pastures, and thriving shrubbery gratefully soak up the lifeblood bestowed upon them by their nurturing mother. Oh, Mother Earth, how lovingly you nurture. The days are cold and grey, but an occasional ray of sunlight scythes its way through to the grounds below. A steam engine trip up the Brocken, the highest mountain in the area, fills me with a sense of tranquility, and I wonder if a new plane of existence awaits me at the top. It doesn't, but I soon find myself drawn to Blocksberg Place near the summit. It is here that witches had come together to dance and engage in pagan ritual. Possibly pressured by Charlemagne into converting to Roman Catholicism, the isolation here gave them the ideal place to continue the adherence to their pagan ways. When I enter Blocksberg Place, I promptly disrobe and begin to dance as I imagine the witches had. Unsure if he would understand English, I begin to loudly chastise the spirit of Charlemagne in my broken German as I continue to dance. Within a few minutes, I am disturbed by a tour group. I must abort my ritual. The hilltop Wernigerode Castle towers over the entire town. You can see the imposing grey stone fortress from virtually anywhere in Wernigerode and be seen from it. A cable car ride from the nearby township of Thaler to the so-called Hexentanzplatz atop a small mountain is peaceful and majestic. In spite of the realization that if something went wrong along the way, a person would have no more than 5 seconds to contemplate one's imminent appointment with eternity. The Hexentanzplatz, translated Witch's Dancing Place, is another location that was rife with pagan activity during the era of the Holy Roman Empire. Today, it offers a substantial array of tourist facilities, as well as the chance to wander off and become one with nature. I initially opt for the latter and lapse quickly into a state of Murakaba. Love, hate, darkness, light, fire, water. I see a European crested tit nourishing itself on the remains of a dead caterpillar. This means nothing. This means everything. The rain falls as heavily in the mornings as at any other time, Mother Nature's intent signaled by the dark storm clouds drifting ominously over the tree-lined ridges. I enter a tourist information center in Bad Harzberg, a nearby village, and am immediately confronted by a large caricatured witch doll sitting in the foyer. They are everywhere in Harz, and whenever you catch a glimpse of one of their hideous, cackling faces, your psyche cannot help but be seared a little bit deeper. I take a bus to visit a place of interest on the furthest fringes of Bad Harzberg, disembarking to walk the final stretch along the side of a country road under driving rain. Just before I reach my destination, I pause, look to a harvested wheat field on the left, and notice well over 100 pitch-black ravens standing in a huddle. More than 200 beady yellow eyes are simultaneously focused on my person. Each single eye pierces my metaphysical sense of enlightenment, as laser beams the dead of night. The day is lost, and I must ultimately face up to a most brutal reality. For death has doth come for my soul. The rain is incessant. I go on an all early morning tour of the Bormannhöhle, reportedly visited several times by the famous poet Goethe. It is in the village of Rubelander. My heart and mind are in perfect unison with the cold, dark interior of the limestone cave complex. The sky is ever dull and grey. It continues to allow the passage of an occasional ray of warm sunlight, usually when there is a brief respite from the rain, as if for no other reason than to provide some sort of basis for hope or optimism. But I don't fall for it. I return to Wernigerode and retire early to my hotel, feeling drained, vulnerable, and psychologically battered on this, the final evening of my journey. After a sleepless night, I wander onto the balcony and look up into the misty hills. The Carpathian birch, so prominent in the local woodlands, tends to thrive at altitudes of 800 to 1,000 meters above sea level. If it is too far below this, however, it will begin to wither like a tusk of sheathed cotton grass upon the first break of winter. The hotel restaurant is quiet at 7 a.m., most guests evidently enjoying a sleep-in to kick off the weekend before coming down for breakfast. I eat very little, but consume a pot of coffee to fight my fatigue. I then sit in silence for an indeterminate amount of time, my eyes fixed intently on a faint blemish on the near wall. I then spring to my feet.
Wherefore art thou, death? Is thee in the fireplace? Or art thou in the kitchen? Or is thee in my mind? My mind!
Mountain of it with which I make my way home. But with each mile I put between myself and my mystical mountain retreat, I feel my burden become a little bit lighter. It can take a man's soul, a quest for enlightenment. But this quest for enlightenment draws to a close.
Sydenham Mufflers have been serving Melbourne's outer northwest for nearly 6 years. Sydenham Mufflers store has currently over 3,000 parts as we speak. The friendly team at Sydenham Mufflers are willing to help you with all your exhaust and muffler needs, and as a special offer to Simpleton subscribers, Warren and the team will offer a 12% discount on all exhaust systems checked by guessing this mystery sound. So go down and see the team at Sydenham Mufflers and tell them that Scott and Daniel sent you. Sydenham Mufflers, proud sponsors of the Simpleton Podcast. Keep on muffling. Okay, so I just got the...
Be quiet for a moment.
Hmm.
Daniel, without breaking stride, we've gone from something with immense depth to a crass piece of commercialization with, might I add, one of the most questionable little action devices tacked on that I've ever come across in my life. And I'm a little bit disgusted overstating it. I'm a bit disappointed, Daniel. You have not broken stride. You've gone from one extreme, immense depth, to the opposite, without even a word. I recently spoke with Klaufis, our new international relations expert, who we briefly introduced last week, and this is what he had to say on the issue. Klaufis,
yeah,
I thank you for agreeing to speak with me.
I thank you for agreeing to speak with me.
Yes. Klaufis, today we will be Today we will be discussing a little bit, we'll be talking a little bit about France and the UN Security Council. Now, Klaufis, there are currently 5 permanent nations on the UN Security Council.
Really?
Yes. These are supposed to be the world's big boys, so to speak.
Yeah, mate, I've heard that before.
So why then is France one of them?
Yeah, mate, that's a good question. What do you think?
I'm asking you why. How did France get on there, and why is France on there?
I don't know, mate. Lol.
Okay. Just to put this into perspective for you, Klaufis.
Yeah, mate.
There are five there. America, which was a great power, going south rapidly now. I've but heard of was that a one, great, mate. Was a great power. I can understand why it was put there. Russia. It's a power, a world power. China, the rising superpower.
That's where Arnold Schwarzenegger's from. I've seen that one movie. I think it was called Red Scorpion or something. Red Heat, mate. Jeez, mate, he smashed them, mate.
China, the rising superpower of the world. Yes, I understand that. England was a great power. I can see why it's one of the five. France. But why France? Clovis.
I don't know, mate. You know, they got some pretty famous people like Napoleon and Shakespeare and Adolf Hitler and that, so I'd say that might be why.
Oh, fair enough, Klaufis. Moving on to the next question.
Okay, mate. Now,
yeah, now if Germany
You're in
comes...
charge.
Yes. If Germany comes to the fore of Europe, pretty much becomes the paymaster of Europe, the center of Europe, which a lot of people suspect, in effect reviving the spirit of Charlemagne, of course, the Franco-German emperor of the Holy Roman Empire back 600 or 700 years. If that happens again, Klaufis, where do you see France fitting into this, if not filling the role of Germany's maid or maiden?
Mate, you know, I don't have a lot upstairs, but I've got a heart of gold, mate. I've heard that said about myself quite a bit, usually by myself. And to tell you the truth, mate, as far as I understand, France is in Europe.
Yes.
So I'd say that's where it fits in, mate.
Very good. Very good, Klaufis. You're talking geography there. On a geopolitical level, if this reformed Holy Roman Empire with Germany front and center is reformed, as some people suspect, where do you see France fitting into that on a geopolitical level?
Mate, fucked if I'd know. Lol.
We'll go on to the next question.
Yeah, sure, mate. It's, you know, up to you.
If Germany comes to the fore of Europe,
yep,
reviving the spirit of Charlemagne and
yep,
and in thus being front and center of a revived Holy Roman Empire,
yep,
where do you see France fitting into all of this, if not filling the role of Germany's maiden?
Mate, fucked if I'd know, mate, but I tell you one thing, mate. I might not have a whole lot upstairs, but I got a heart of gold, mate.
The question, can you please address the question, Klaufis?
Mate, I would address it, but to be honest, I don't have a bloody clue, mate. It was a pretty difficult question, all that stuff about Roman Polanski and that, mate. No idea what you're talking about there. Do you think you're some kind of smart ass or something, huh? You think you're tough, mate? You wanna go, mate?
We'll move on to the next question.
Yeah, you better move on.
Of the five nations on the council, there are some that are straddled with serious issues and ongoing human rights violations,
yeah,
that are rooted in a lack of real democracy. Then, of course, there are also Russia and China, who are also nothing flash in this regard. What are your thoughts on the members of the council, Klaufis?
Sorry, what council is this, mate? Is this the Strathbogie Council?
The UN Security Council.
Sorry, mate, who's the UN again?
We'll move on to the next question.
You asked the question, mate. I just wanted... to be honest, mate, you know, I'm not following 100% what you're asking me in that, but so if you could just explain once again what the UN is?
It stands for the United Nations. It's and we're talking about the UN.
Oh,
security.
UN, mate. I thought it was some kind of word like UN, like, I don't know, YUUEN or something, mate. But you mean the letters UN, mate? Like, to be honest, I always thought it was called the UN, mate. But I get what you mean now.
France has of late been throwing around military threats against the nation of Syria. Rightly or wrongly, I'm not commenting or being partisan here, but it's been doing it pretty much knowing that it's safe to do to throw these threats around from within the ranks of its bigger allies. Empty bluster, Klaufis?
Mate, there's always some kind of bloke, you know. So, you know, the guy down the pub, and he's got his mates and that with him, and he might, you know, call you a poof or something, and you think, yeah, you'll keep tough guy. And then you see him again, mate, maybe a year or two later, and he's walking with his kids or something, mate. So you just wait, and you come up behind him, and bam, you smash him in the back of the head, mate. And then in front of his kids, you bam, and smash, and kick his stupid head in, mate.
Okay. Klaufis, does the world need a UN Security Council, let alone a UN?
Mate, you know, I might not have a lot upstairs, but I got a heart of gold, mate. So, it's, you know, frills the spills, mate. Some for everyone, mate.
That's not at all addressing the question.
Nah.
Does
mate, I got one word for you, mate. Yep. Fuck you.
Sorry, who should have the say over military commitments? Who should have the final say on whether they go ahead
mate,
or not?
Mate, I should have the final say, mate, and that's me, mate. I'd take them all on, mate. They all come up to me, mate. Hey, Klaufis, you want to go, mate? I say, nah, mate, I don't want any trouble. And they turn around and bang, mate, you're down, mate. So, yeah.
It seems a big part of... actually, I don't want to be drawn on that, Klaufis. I thank you for your time, Klaufis.
Thank you for your time, Klaufis.
This is Sean Connery, and you're listening to the Simpleton Podcast.
Look, speaking of things cultured, I think we've got a new segment for the listeners, and this segment looks at the world of cinema. And for this segment, we've decided to name it The Film Review.
Yes, that was quite melodramatic the way you said The Film Review. But let's move on.
The
my
running
goodness
sheet,
me.
Scott. The running sheet.
Yeah, the running sheet. You bamboozled me. listen, I'm looking at the running sheet now and it says Scott, and then it has my line next to it. And it starts with Scott. So am I talking with myself or am I?
You should be used to that.
It says, Scott, you've been out and about the movies this week.
Yeah. I think I know who we're referring to, don't we, Scott?
Yeah. Okay, so I'm not talking with myself or referring to myself in the third person. So I'll replace Scott with Daniel, shall
For
I?
For once, no. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. Daniel, you've been out and about in the world of cinema this week, sampling some, and I believe you have the inaugural Simpleton Film Review for us.
First of all, I like how you just riff, you know, off the running sheet, you know. Instead of saying, Daniel, you've been out and about at the movies this week, you say, oh, Daniel, I believe you've been out in the world of cinema this week. I mean, it doesn't impress anyone. And in the future, if I was you, I would just stick with the fucking script. But that's right, Scott. This week, I went along to see a French film, The Final Probe, or La Sonde Finale, as it is pronounced in its native tongue. The fifth film from director Jean-Paul Riviera, The Final Probe looks at the dark underbelly of the Parisian patisserie scene. With its endless cast of kooky characters, the film's subplots are as layered as some of the pastries that adorn many of the film's dark and dingy scenes. The film's main character, Alain Dubuffont, Leon Matisse, is a seasoned veteran of the Parisian police pastry and icing investigation unit. We follow him into the seedy patisserie scene as he's on the tail of an elaborate plot to extort the Belgian government out of its national supply of cocoa. It is through Buffon's liaison with the Belgium embassy that he meets Celine Dion, Matilda Crapard,
a young and sassy impresari, assisting Buffont with access to the staff and files that he needs to prove his suspicions that the extortion attempt is an inside job. Eventually, Buffont and Dior feelings for each other simmer over, despite de Buffont's suspicions that Dior is in on the plot.
Un entrepreneur aperitif?
Ah oui. Mon chat. Ah oui. Merci, mon chat.
Hier soir, j'ai la maladie que vous aviez la kitchenette bien coupée.
Ah oui. Ah oui, mon chat. Merci.
Cigarette, Madame Dior?
Oh, oh oui. Merci, mon chat. Oh.
Elle fait, j'adore à cet objet. Il y a Annie, il y a Paris.
Oh, oh oui. Oh, oh oui, oui.
Despite all the sugar and icing, the final probe is ultimately a dissatisfying tale. Leaning heavily from the 1946 classic The Last Probe, La Dernière Sonde, the wooden performances of both Matisse and Crapard underlie the thinness of the overall plot. Screening at selected cinemas checked the back of public toilet doors of for venues and screening times. 3 stars, Scott.
Archival audio of a cricket match between the Australian Imperial Second 11 and the touring Botswana team from the early 50s. I think it was 1953. Of course, it would be impractical to let the whole thing run during this podcast. So I'm going to let the... We're going to let the final over of that game roll, Daniel.
Welcome back to the Taguna Sports Complex. Listeners, we have just one over left in the spectacle. It's been a ring-a-ding-dinger, a marvellous display of dour cricket by both sides. It looked earlier in the day as if the Australians might make their move, but the Botswana players, led by Captain Panashego Kidikilbe, have dug in well, and it looks like we're going to have a trip for biscuits. What do you think, Peter?
You can say that again, Henry. Looks like we're headed for a draw, but it's been a splendid exhibition of stingy cricket. Over the 12 days of the game, neither side has given an inch. And when the Australians challenged early this morning, Captain Kedar Kilwe, backed up by Ian Kama, really dug their heels in for the Botswana team. And they still remain at the crease as the game draws to a dandy close.
Recapping the scores, Peter, the Australian Imperial Second 11 won the toss on day one and elected to bat. They were eventually dismissed for 297, just before stumps on the second day. The Botswana were eventually bundled out for 233 early on day four. The Australians played 116 in the second innings, which ended late on day four. The Botswana are currently on 6 for 152. At one stage this morning, they were on 6 for 35, but Kildakeva and Kama have been rock solid since the fall of the last wicket, and are on 79 and 15 respectively. And now, Simon Pritchard is ready to bow the last over of the game for the Australians.
Here he comes. And it's a ball, straight to the boundary.
A marvellous display of cricketing strength there, straight out of the textbook. And Kama goes to 19. He's batted very patiently for his runs. He's needed almost 5 hours and 142 deliveries for his 19, but he's served his team admirably.
You bet your bottom dollar, Henry. Let's not forget about Kildakilwe. He's been a real hatchet man for the team.
He's no crumb, is he, Peter? You're right about that. And again, here comes Pritchard.
It's a very unusual action he has, the way his elbow dislocates before each loop. Oh, he's globbing it! Straight into little Bo Peak at mid-off.
Oh, and he's down.
Dropped it! The captain won't be happy with that. He put it down like a sick cat.
Absolutely sickening crunch on impact. Down like a sack of dead fieldsmen. And here comes Sven Svensson, unceremoniously booting the utterly limp Peak out of the way. And they made two off that.
Captain Picard shaking his head in disappointment. Can't say I blame him.
No, can't blame the man. Catches win matches.
circular metallic craft, approximately 5 meters across. There's a raised dome in the center.
Which explains why there is no specific rule prohibiting human sacrifice in modern test cricket.
Fascinating. The conference with umpire Death Strike still going on, and Pritchard's arm still bent backwards at a 90-degree angle at the elbow.
Looks like they've come to a decision. Ah, they've given Pritchard a runner.
Haven't seen this since 49. For those not up to date with modern rules, this means that another player will run up and mime bowling whilst Pritchard stands at the crease and with his left hand...
Counters are going off the charts. Have ordered all team members to take iodine as a precaution. In addition to the two bodies of the two small humanoids, there is another, significantly taller.
Ever seen a man's head explode like that since the unauthorized tour of the Arctic back in 37?
And you can see why protective gear has been standardized and firearms are restricted to those of a purely ornamental nature in the modern game.
It does take some sense of wonder out of the game, though.
Not sure I agree with you there, Peter. That last delivery was one of a kind.
One of a kind for wicketkeeper William Keeper, that's for sure.
And a substitute keeper, randomly selected from the crowd, is putting on keeper's kit.
Not sure those red whites are in keeping with the spirit of the game. Two more deliveries to come off this over.
Not sure that the 10-year-old girl that was selected will fit in with...
Majestic 12, repeat. Are down. Code EPEP. Code EPEP.
Inbound. Godspeed X-20. Tell your family.
Shadow of a doubt. 6 runs. 2 children shattered and immobile, but without a doubt having the time of their lives. If you are going to go to a 12-day, 7-fatality draw, this is how you do it. What a spanking match this has been.
Couldn't agree with you more, Henry. A bit bloodier than we're used to, but what a treat for the spectators.
Yes, the battered yet jubilant survivors, all except for a hollow-eyed Captain Picard limping off the field, heads held high.
And those tears we can see, Henry.
Captain Picard, yes, weeping tears of joy at this ruddy great display of cricket and sportsmanship.
The Oval. Come in.
Well, fuck me, Scott. Do you really think that was worth the tens of thousands of dollars that you paid to get that restored?
Is that a rhetorical question or actually posing the question from the heart?
It's a question from the bottom of my heart, Scott.
Right.
How much did that cost? Give me a ballpark figure.
I gave you the figures last week.
You gave me, 16 full-time staff.
About 35 hours each for the week.
35 hours each at about $32 an hour.
Yeah.
For well over a week, including overtime on the Sundays. I know that they had to work on the Sunday to get them ready for this podcast.
Yeah.
Give me a ballpark figure.
All right, let me do it. Just roughly. Okay, so you got the 16 workers, multiply that by 35. What have you got? You've got about, I'm just doing it roughly, just rough guess, $500, multiply that by about $8,000, give or take, $5,000 or $6,000.
That's a very conservative estimate.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just do a few quick figures.
Yeah.
16 by 35 by 32 equals $17,920. That's just for man hours alone.
That's phenomenal.
That is phenomenal.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal.
That's just for man hours.
High jinks and good times. Now, listeners, as you are aware, a central part of this podcast is you. And so, therefore, we move on to the final segment of this Best of Special, Listener's Letters. And my word, have we not received some funny ones in our time. Enjoy.
I think it's time for Listener's Letters.
Scott, you have the first letter.
I have the first letter. This one, there was no real name attached to this. I think a title or a nickname. This one comes from the interrogator, and this is what he or she writes. I have stood back and watched my city tear itself apart for long enough. City Hall, racked by infighting, scandal, and corruption, is part of the problem. While the city's few cops that aren't on the take have effectively had their hands tied as crime on the streets spirals out of control. The residents of this once great city need someone to take matters into their own hands and wrest back our neighborhoods from the relentless grip of the syndicates. Gee. I am that man. I will blend into society by day, but after donning my balaclava, nondescript clothing and cape, I will roam the streets by night on a relentless crusade to crush crime in whatever form it may take, wherever it is found. I will not waver. I will not falter. I am the interrogator. That is from the interrogator of Maipole, Northeast Victoria. Daniel, got something to say, or do you want to go on to the next letter?
Just want to briefly touch on this one, Scott. I'm getting a little bit sick of people actually writing in and wasting our time. As you and I both know, Scott, Maipole is what? It's one of those towns. It's not even a town, is it? I mean, it's just a postcode, really. It's one of those places. It's one of those places, and don't try and paint it up as a charming little rural hamlet or some shit like that, right? It's out on the flats of northeast Victoria. You blink and you drive through it. You've missed it. And it, you know, to describe whatever civil infrastructure there is in Maipole as, you know, City Hall, it's just going over the top. You know, I'm sure that there is a degree of infighting and scandal in Maipole, as there is in every small community, every community. Yeah. But to go on and say that there is corruption, and that's only part of the problem, and that the city's few cops aren't able to take on, you know, this wave of corruption and scandal, you know, flowing freely through City Hall in Maipole is just, and the fact that the cockhead's named himself the interrogator.
How dare you call him cockhead?
Fuck it, he's wasting our time. He's wasting everyone's time.
We get letters like that all the time. Is it a poor reflection of us that we don't sift through them? We get too many probably to read and judge. We tend just to take them at random.
Anti-censorship cuts both ways, right? If people are going to write in and waste our time, then we have every right to tell them that we think that they are wasting our time, and further than that, that they're fuckheads.
All right, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't even have a church, Maipole. I mean, it doesn't have anything. And I'm speaking as someone who proudly represented Maipole in under 14 and under 16s cricket for a period of about 5 to 6 years. I've never been to the joint. Well, I have been in the joint, but I blinked.
So this one is from Professor Larry Weathers of Mount Isa. Where is Mount Isa, Daniel?
Australia, Scott. Australia.
yeah. Pass that one. This is what Professor Larry Weathers writes. I have something interesting for you. As an expert in motion physics, I don't require Galileo's observations on acceleration and free fall to tell me that a fall of 100 meters would be fatal. However, I believe I have found a loophole which could make survival from such a height scientifically certain. I call it my 1 centimeter antifactor, the theory that, simply put, 1 centimeter is not the difference between life and death. I plan to prove this by going into free fall once a day. Each day it will be 1 centimeter higher than before. My first plunge will be 1 centimeter, my second 2 and 7 by the end of the week, a meter after 100 days, and so on. Within 30 years, I will be making my final jump at 100 meters. All I need first are the materials to build a scaffold with ladder and adjustable platform, which will go in my backyard. Don't worry, I plan on keeping you guys thoroughly up to date. That was what he wrote. What do you think of that, Daniel?
Well, thanks for the letter, Larry. Look, I wouldn't be too concerned about keeping us up to date. I think that we can just wish you all the best as you go to prove your 1 centimeter anti-factor. I wish you very well at the 20 meter mark. I think your aim to get to 100 meters is quite ambitious. I'll be interested to see what happens at the 5 meter mark. To be honest,
but Daniel, I think that's his factor.
I know what he's trying to say.
Are you saying there's going to be a life and death difference between 4 meters 99 and 5 meters? I think that's what he's out to prove.
Yeah, look, I can see that you're getting your own little niche audience here, Scott, with listeners that are coming up with the same sort of harebrained theories that you espouse on a weekly basis. Look, good luck, Larry. I don't wish you any harm. I certainly don't encourage any other of our simpletons out there to try that at home or anywhere, to be honest. But just good luck with it, Larry. Don't worry about keeping us posted. I'm sure we'll find out one way or the other.
This one is from Charles Forbes Sr. of Toorak, Melbourne. And Charles writes, I recently caught a Morwong whilst fishing in Port Phillip Bay. He was a ripper, and I took him home to eat. My mate told me that they taste best if you avoid cooking them, but rather let them dry out for a couple of days at room temperature. So I followed his advice. Big mistake! Exclamation mark.
Yeah.
I'll spare you the grisly details, but within half an hour of consumption, my stomach was a gurgling, volatile cauldron of septic filth.
That's a colourful description.
The letter's not finished, Daniel.
Sorry. Go on.
Okay. Here it is. I held on for as long as I... you put me off my game, Daniel. Let me just regain my composure. Okay. It's not finished. He obviously deemed the event relevant enough to write into us. So
we appreciate that. We appreciate that.
Appreciate the input. Let me continue until the end. Okay. I held on for as long as I could, but it was hopeless. I'm sorry. Let me
pull yourself together, man.
Okay, Daniel, you're
really
not
funny. We're laughing at someone's misfortune.
Okay, here it is. Okay, before long, my stomach, badly reeling, shot its. Sorry, Charles. I'm sorry.
Would you like me to read it, Scott? Would you like me to finish it?
Please finish it.
Okay.
Please finish it.
Charles writes, before long, my stomach, badly reeling, shot its putrid...
Shut
up. Before long, my stomach, badly reeling, before long, my stomach, badly reeling, shot out its putrid contents out of my major cavities in a manner that could only be described as explosive and evolved. There's an explosive and violent eruption of septic filth. Charles Forbes, Senior, Toorak, Melbourne. Well, Charles,
I'm ashamed.
We shouldn't laugh. We shouldn't laugh at other people's misfortune. We've got to stop doing that. We're not that kind of journalist. Yeah.
Daniel, we were juvenile just then. I'm sorry to Charles. I'm sorry to the listenership. This was probably worse than watching Beavis and Butthead just like that for 2 or 3 minutes. I'm sorry. It was juvenile. It was puerile. As Daniel said, we shouldn't be laughing at others' misfortune. Charles obviously deemed it relevant enough to write in and share with us, and I appreciate the input. Sorry, Charles, but also thank
Scott,
you for
I
the
don't
input.
Think we can recover from that, so I think we better wrap up the show.
Champagne comedy at its finest. Well, as the man with the dulcet tones said, it's time to wrap this baby up and bring it home. I hope you've enjoyed this special as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. Next week it will be service resumed as normal. Until then, have a good time and sleep well, if you can.